Well, after a few more topics with Lex Lonehood, the author of Nightmare Land, of course, we will take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM when we come right back. We are back with you and Lex Lonehood, of course, in his book Nightmare Land. His website, nightmare.land, L-A-N-D, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Lex, I think it's so great you're on Audible already.
Yeah, and I'd like to give a shout-out to Neil Heliger's,
the voice.
Narrator of my book. He really did a bang-up job. It's just super entertaining to hear him do the unabridged book, and I got to have input on the casting, so it was really fun to be involved in that process. And, you know, in this era of podcasts, it really does feel like audiobooks are a big component of how people interact with books nowadays.
It works. It really does. Let's talk a little bit about psychic attacks and how that plays into all of this.
Sure. It's an interesting question to ponder if we are vulnerable, as I was saying before, to outside entities mm-hmm. while we sleep. And there does seem to be some evidence that that things of that nature could be happening. When I was writing about sleep paralysis, there were a couple of cases where instead of a demonic being materializing in the room, people awoke and actually saw an entity, sort of like a troll-like figure in one case, and another one, a strange kind of transparent abstract shape. But these entities were feeding on them and seemed surprised when the person awakened. So it felt like I was saying before, like there might be some kind of ecosystem mm-hmm. where these astral entities or what have you could be accessing us when we have our guard down, as it were.
What is the devil's dummy?
That was kind of a fascinating story that I wrote about. And Jason Jam, someone that has done some illustrations for us at the Coast site, did some illustrations for my book and did a really cool one for this story. But it concerns a clergyman who is known as Father X. And he'd been corresponding with some different psychical researchers about these out-of-body experiences that he regularly had when he resided at a monastery. But one morning, just after he woke up, he heard this mumbling off the side of his bed, and he saw this little man who kind of resembled a ventriloquist dummy, and he seemed to be speaking this unidentifiable language. So Father X got out of bed and grabbed him by the foot, but when he tugged on him, the little man bounced off the ceiling like he was a rubber ball, and kind of evaded capture when he tried to grab him again and appeared on the other side of the bed. And then the little man turned away and uttered three short but distinct phrases. He said, "We have him. Christ is burning. The hummingbird men have him."
Jeez.
And Father X goes on to say in his correspondence that he'd considered the devil as just a mythological figure, but after that experience, he started to question it.
It kind of reminds me of Lionel Fanthorpe's Spring-Heeled Jack stories.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of strange little entities that pop in and pop out.
That seem to move in a way that defies any explanation.
Let's take a few calls, and we'll come back and talk about lucid dreaming, Lex. Lex Lonehood with us, Nover also. You can use that name. Mimi in Midland, Texas, welcome to the program. Mimi, you're on with Lex. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I salute the light in you and your guests.
Thank you, dear.
Thank you for the program.
Thank you.
I had a situation happen almost exactly 30 years ago, and I call it the dream situation. I hadn't been married very long, and one night I could not get to sleep. And I got up, and I had a horrible disturbance within me that wasn't normal at all. So I started pacing and praying, as I call it, and it wouldn't go away. And in addition to that, I had the compulsion, and I mean it was driving, to leave my home. Well, there was no reason, no rhyme or reason. This was entirely subjective. And it wouldn't stop. I mean, it got worse and worse. And I finally thought, well, I'll act like it and see if that makes it subside. So I did. Got dressed, got my keys, went out the door, stood there a minute, pretended I was driving, went back in and dressed. Well, it got worse. It just got horribly, uncomfortably worse. And it was about 2 a.m. by then. It had gone on 3 hours.
3 hours too long, right?
Exactly. So I decided to call a very close friend, worrying, you know, that I was going to disrupt her sleep and she would be upset. But I called her, and instead of being upset, she gasped and said, "Oh, thank God you called." She said, "I was having the worst nightmare I've ever had, and you stopped it." So we discussed it, and she told me the dream. She was running through a dark wood and saw a house in the distance. She went, ran straight to the house. The door was ajar. She opened it. There was two corpses in the middle of the room.
Oh, jeez.
She slammed the door shut, continued running, saw another house with a light coming out the window. She went up to the window this time instead of knocking at the door, and she saw a dozen cowled figures around a round table with candles at each figure, and at that point, I had called. The next morning, my husband got up, and always got up first and made coffee and all that, and he was drinking coffee, and this was not normal for him at all, but he said, "I had the most disturbing dream last night." He relayed to the word, to the description, the exact dream my friend had had.
Whoa.
And the dream had stopped at the point where he looked in the window and saw the figures.
Lex, have you heard of shared dreams?
I have. I've heard about it on Coast, in fact, and in other places. It does seem to be a rare but real occurrence. And it does seem like what Mimi was describing is some kind of psychic connection between the three people. And perhaps in the dream state, we're more open or susceptible to these kind of psychic emanations.
Absolutely. Tell us what the God helmet is.
That was something I researched in the chapter about aliens and looking at how aliens possibly relate to sleep paralysis, because a few years back, some psychologists were saying kind of in a case-closed manner, like, oh, that's the explanation behind these bedroom alien abductions. And one of the people that was looking into this was psychologist Susan Blackmore from the UK. And so the God helmet is an invention of the late neuroscientist Michael Persinger. And what he did was he rigged up this motorcycle helmet with coils in order to send weak magnetic fields to the temporal lobe. And typically when people wear this helmet, they'll report mystical or religious experiences. Mm-hmm. So when she put the helmet on, at first she didn't feel anything. And then all of a sudden, it was like two hands had grabbed her shoulder and were suddenly yanking her. And then the sensation moved to her leg, and she felt like she was being pulled up and distorted, kind of like being dragged halfway up the ceiling. And so she kind of connected that with the abduction experience and wondered if there was some kind of temporal lobe brain state that correlated with people's abductions.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of neurosurgeons and neurologists believe the temporal lobe is where you can get not only seizures, but deja vu experiences.
Mm-hmm. It
comes right from there. So that's interesting that that would happen in this case.
Yeah, and it seems as brain science continues on, they're discovering more and more locations where different things are associated with.
I remember talking with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, God rest her soul, about dreams and whether they are part of the brain or part of something else. And I think she always liked to tip her way into the something else realm. What do you think?
It feels like there's a bit of both going on. And I think that in terms of neuroscience and psychology, they've really not been able to come up with one explanation to really describe what the purpose of dreams are, or certainly where they come from. So there's a lot of debate and different theories. And when I was looking at all of that, I would find a certain amount of truth to a lot of them, but it felt like there were always exceptions and sort of like, well, yes, that's true, but what about in these cases? So it feels like a very elusive thing to try to figure out.
Let's go to Long Island, New York. Joseph's with us. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hi, Lex. Great title for the book. Sounds like a movie, potentially.
Maybe. That's a great idea, Joe.
Yeah. I have two questions. My coast-to-coast question would be for Lex. What would you say is for you one of the strangest animals on the planet or sea creatures? And then my dream question would be, someone gave me a hat this week, like a winter hat. I like to wear them when it gets like fallish or slightly fallish, like a winter hat in the evening.
And in New York, it's that way now, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I have a dream where, I'm in the woods in a national park right off the road. I'm thinking I could also run on the road, and I start to run in the woods. So this could be 5 years ago or 5 years from now. So there's not really a date to the dream. Then in the dream, all of a sudden, I'm like, where's the hat? Someone did the favor of getting me this nice hat today, which only cost $1, by the way, at a fair. But it's, and I said, I feel bad. I already lost it. And then I had it in my shorts pocket, So then the idea is the dream was dated to that day, even though nothing else about the dream was dated to that particular day. So that's, to me, strange, like having a phenomena which dates the dream. Like it could be like today's newspaper suddenly shows up in a dream that could be, like I said, 5 years prior or 5 years from now.
Well, in terms of the strange animal, Lex, there are a lot of weird things on this planet, aren't there?
There certainly are. I when he was asking that, I think what popped into my head was the chupacabra, just from when I originally heard about it, going back to the Art Bell days in the 90s. There was something that just seemed so freaky and captivating about the way it was described, and just, it had that quality of menace and otherworldliness that really captured my imagination.
And, of course, the other stuff that he was talking about?
The date thing is interesting. If you could milk that, it might be a good way to get lottery numbers. But it also made me think in terms of, like, losing the hat. I have kind of a running theme in my dreams of things like where I've left some article of clothing behind and have to go back to get it. But what happens is, because I think a lot of these dream locations are being made up on the fly, that you can't actually get back to where you started from. And so one thing I ran across is that actually about 2/3 of dreams have a negative cast to them. And I wondered if it's because of the actual fabric of dreams that it's this more amorphous reality that's subject to change. And because we're used to this stable reality in our waking world, we get frustrated because we don't realize we're in a dream. And then when something is not where we left it, or we can't get back to where we were, it creates kind of an anxiety.
Lucid dreaming. One of my favorite parts of dreaming is knowing you're in a dream. You can change the outcome. You can do all kinds of things with it, Lex.
It's great, yeah. It's a hard state to achieve. So that part of it is tricky, I think. I do write in the book about some different techniques and ways to try to get there. But absolutely, once you're in that state, it's really a amazing gateway to a whole host of different experiences. You could have a variety of spiritual things. You could have adventures. You could even go flying out into the stars. It's really limitless in a lot of ways.
It's fun.
Yeah. Are you able to do it regularly?
No, not at will, but when it happens and you know you're in that dream, I mean, that's kind of neat. And then you wake up.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say, that sometimes when I attain lucidity, I get excited. And then, yeah, it's like you have to be very, like, calm and kind of neutral. and then sort of keep repeating to yourself because you can quickly forget after you realize that you're in a dream.
Let's go to Chris in Clearwater, Florida. Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Just speaking from experience, it helps astral travel, found by sleeping with crystals and minerals nearby, especially around the head, like kyanite, selenite, celestite, and shungite. And if you feel sleep paralysis, you're at a point where you can choose to move your awareness away from or back to your physical body if you experience sleep paralysis, which can include vibrating sounds or shaking or seemingly moving your body or bed, bouncing around the room, things like that. And if you feel alarmed, just direct energy to your medulla oblongata, which moving your neck will accomplish, and you'll be fully back in your physical body. This practice can be reassuring that you'll never lose control, though when you quickly come back into your physical body, don't be surprised if you feel shockingly lethargic, because to move just a single finger, the amount of energy needed is so much more than to fly or instantly teleport somewhere else. And if you're lucid dreaming, often you're actually astral traveling and confabulating or exaggerating or ignoring or otherwise misperceiving certain details. You can't fully yet accept how fantastic it is. So before you go to sleep, remind yourself of your capabilities, your boundless capabilities. And if you suspect or realize you're dreaming, consider that you're likely astral traveling and ask spirit for help in revealing the truth to correctively transform your perceptions and make the most of the experience. Now, for instance, the more lighthearted you are, the less affected you are by gravity, the easier it is to help heal yourself or other beings or situations and do much more. But, you don't need to fly or walk or otherwise travel to a location. You can will yourself to instantly be wherever, whenever, look into the abundance of possible pasts or present or futures or factors involved in probabilities. And you can rest assured that until we physically leave our bodies, our astral bodies are connected by the silver cord and reinforce whatever helps you feel less attached to your physical body and associating more with your still foundational, the thrilling stillness of your foundational formless spirit thought body. And then you should choose your emotionally expansive astral body, which you can take any size or shape, expand to as comfortable, as large as you feel comfortable.
I'm going to try some of those techniques, Chris. We're going to come back and wrap things up with Lex Lonehood and take final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines begin next hour, and of course, we're going to come back and wrap things up with Lex Lonehood, his book, Nightmare Land, and your final calls as well. And welcome back to Coast. We're back with Lex Lonehood, our webmaster, of course. We've got Greg Bishop sitting in tonight for Sean LaSueur doing the webmastering. I wonder if you could have done both tonight, Lex. What do you think?
Probably. I wouldn't have been that happy about it, though.
I love it. And you're still in Florida. You... The last hurricane, Dorian, you were okay. It kind of missed Florida, didn't it?
Yeah, it was scary as hell, though, really. I mean, because it came about 100 miles or so east and of where I am and just basically destroyed the Bahamas.
It did. It just wiped them out.
Yeah, so when it's that close, you have to wonder, could it happen here? I don't know if the islands are typically more vulnerable to that kind of thing, but... It just, with climate change, it does feel like those waters are getting warmer and these storms are getting stronger and they're staying in one spot longer. I think that's what really did in the Bahamas, that storm just planted itself there. And, just how much can you take of those kind of winds?
Well, I know when we were doing our intention experiment, it was headed right for Florida. I wonder if we accidentally moved it into the Bahamas.
Yes, well,
there's always ramifications.
You're sparing me, but I think some Bahamanians may not share that sentiment.
And then the climate change is going crazy these days, too. last night leaving the show, the mountainside was full of engulfed in flames. It probably still will be tonight, too. It's just a tragedy what's going on.
Yeah, it seems pretty crazy in California with them doing those power outages up north and then the fires down where you are.
Back to the calls. Kathy, first-time caller in Idaho. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
George and Lex. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I had a really, a couple of years when I was just a little girl, and I, when I would run a fever, I would have a recurring, I don't know what you'd classify it as, a night terror, but I would get out of bed, and I think I was probably kind of glassy-eyed, and I must have started yelling, because the whole family, everybody, would wake up and start running after me because I was running through the house. And as I recall later, I was being pursued. I felt like spiritually or whatever, I was actually being pursued and I was running for my life.
Well, what you were, happened to you too is you were having a fever dream, and Lex, you've looked into that.
I have. I mean, it sounds like she was having kind of a combination of night terrors with maybe stimulated by the fever dreams. I looked at dreams that people have under unusual states or influences, like high fevers. And what I discovered was pretty interesting, that there is a commonality of these distortions of time and space that, for instance, a person could feel like they're just a tiny little dot and they're like on a chessboard with gigantic chess pieces that just have this menacing quality because of their hugeness. And I also looked into a book written back in the 19th century about called Confessions of an Opium Eater, and the author was using that drug and having these super bizarre nightmares, and the distortions for him were often related to time. So it would be like these nightmares that would last for like 100 years in one night.
Oh, geez. Have you had your own nightmares? I mean, just horrible nightmares?
You know, I luckily have not had a lot of nightmares. And it was something I thought about when I was interviewing some people who shared their recurring nightmares with me for the book. And I felt like, you know, I'm kind of blessed in a way not to have to have that kind of experience, because it just, like one person was telling me how it's just such a horrible way to wake up and start your day after you've had this utterly grueling and relentless experience that just bleeds into your waking life.
Let's go next to Thomas in Chico, California.
How's it going?
Good, Tom. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a, you know, I was listening to tonight's show, and it kind of struck a chord with me because I, you know, when I was younger, I had night terrors, you know, all the time. And the reason I actually called was I get sleep paralysis pretty often, and I've never seen anything or had any of, like, the horrible, you know, I've never seen anything before. Except one time, I just was wondering if anybody else has had an experience like this. It was like 12 in the afternoon, and I was taking a nap, and I fell under sleep paralysis. It happens very often, so I kind of was just like, oh, okay. Because whenever it happens, I know what's happening, and I try and fight it, you know? But I kind of let this one go on because the door downstairs, and this is all going on. The door downstairs had flown open, wind gushed through the whole entire house, all while I'm under sleep paralysis, and a white fluorescent dove had flown into my room and was kind of flying around the room and perched up on my TV and looked at me. And this happened all in about 5 minutes, and then it flew at me, and then I snapped out of the paralysis. But it's weird to me because I kind of felt like a kind of tranquil feeling, like the dove was emitting a kind of like, I don't want to say like happiness, but it didn't feel scary like most times. So I was wondering if, you know, if there's anything you've heard about that, of people having like almost, I don't want to say it was a good experience, but
euphoric.
It wasn't, Yeah, it was euphoric. It felt like euphoria. Exactly. That's the word.
So was the dove actually in the room? Are you talking about something that happened while you were in the midst of sleep paralysis, or was the
I was
bird
yeah
part
I was
the,
I was under sleep paralysis, and it was all, you know, I don't know how to explain it. The dove was in the room. It was a very bright white fluorescent dove flying around the room, and it perched up on my TV and was staring at me, and then it flew at me, and then I snapped out of it. But it was just so weird to me because I always hear stories of people seeing, like, evil beings and feeling scared. But that was the one time while I was under sleep paralysis, and I didn't feel that way. And it's just, I've always just kind of been trying to question, like, I've always questioned it and was wondering if there's, like, a deeper meaning to the dove or whatever.
They could represent something there, Lex.
It does have kind of a liberating quality to the way you're describing, and especially compared to all these malevolent beings that people see. But it also points to that sleep paralysis can be a gateway to out-of-the-body experiences and lucid dreaming and things that are positive. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a super negative thing. I think what happens is people's bodies are frozen, and that leads to this whole kind of fear complex, and that may contribute to these frightful figures. Or it could be that the mind is in a certain borderline state that allows access to these kind of astral or paraphysical beings.
Let's go next to Bill in the state of Washington. Welcome to the program, Bill.
Hey, I have this dream every now and again. It's a lucid dream, and it's like the only one I have. The rest of my dreams are very basic. I mean, nothing exciting at all. I don't even remember them, to tell you the truth. But this one lucid dream I have that's recurring, the earth is alive, and it's talking to me, and it's like feminine. I don't know why, but it seems to me that the earth is feminine, and it's telling me that our existence as humans is a sign of its senescence, its age, that our consciousness, our existence is a sign of its old age. And then it shows me a time when it was young, and it looked like it had a skin. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen halibut laying at the bottom of the ocean. You know, they're all, like, kind of laying one on top of the other. It almost looks like skin cells. That's what the earth looked like. And it was totally alive. And it's been dying this whole time. And, you know, aging. I shouldn't say dying. It's aging. And it's telling me that it will all happen again. And, I don't know. I'm sorry. And in the background, I just want to say, I remember this clearly. For some reason, it's radiating like a gold light, and there's no stars. It's in a blackness that's not really like space. It's just in like a void. Anyways, I just wanted to share that and see if you had any input on that.
Interesting dream, Lex.
Yeah, very powerful and moving and fascinating that you're in a lucid state so that you're aware that this whole message is coming to you from within a dream. So it seems like it's a great opportunity to ask questions and be able to even learn more. I think that when you're lucid, it does feel like you're getting closer to the source in terms of the information, and yet there's still an uncertainty about it in terms of evaluating what you're experiencing and seeing, whether it's just another subconscious mirage, if you will, or if you're getting closer to the truth. And that story was certainly provocative and gives you food for thought.
Rosemary would tell us, Lex, that dreams are so powerful you can do and accomplish just about anything through your dream state. I would agree with that. How about you?
Yeah, I think that it's a great state to incubate different things. I think that's a good way to, before you go to sleep, to put in your mind that you want an answer to something or want to experience something. And part of the research that I did on lucid dreaming was looking at Robert Wagoner's work. He's been on the show.
Yeah.
And he has some really fascinating experiences with lucidity where he actually ask questions to kind of like the production behind the dream. He'll just recognize that some of this, of what he's seeing, is a projection, and get these answers back. And then he'll also be able to differentiate between dream characters that he's making up and ones that seem to have their own independent reality, which really fascinated me.
We've got Erica in California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Erica, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say thank you, George, for being on the radio.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for listening.
Yes, I'm a long-time listener. I just wanted to say about the dreams that I always have very vivid dreams, and I can even talk in my sleep and have a full-on conversation. And also, I can jump back into a dream that I've dreamt already.
Now, that's a great art. What is that called, Lex, when you can leave a dream and then pick it back up again?
I don't know that if there's an official name for that. I from just talking to people, I think that is a common experience and kind of an amazing one. That's
cool, isn't it? To be able to stop a dream. It's like putting it on pause and then coming back.
One thing that kind of reminded me of was another thing that Lucy Gillis had written about, and that was something she recognized while in the lucid state, that she was having two dreams that were occurring at the same time, kind of like a double feature, and that normally if she wasn't lucid, she figured that when she woke up, that the story would just be kind of jumbled together or put in some kind of linear fashion. But because she was lucid, she was able to recognize that there are these two dreams both occurring at the same time. Kind of mind-boggling.
Indeed, indeed. Lex Lonehood with us as we wrap things up. His book is called Nightmare Land. His website for this book is linked at coasttocoastam.com. It is nightmare.land, L-A-N-D. That's amazing you were able to get that as the URL.
Yeah, kind of fun. Yeah, like I said, there's a whole host of domains out there, so it's fun to get away from the .com thing a little bit.
Let's go to Darren, truck driving in Oklahoma, maybe the final caller here. Go ahead, Darren.
Hey, great show.
Thank you, sir.
I have some lucid dreams that I feel like I can control, you know, the outcome to. Those are real neat. But then, like the lady said before, sometimes I can dream and it seems like I drop back into a dream before, but I can't ever remember what I can't tell you what they were about right now. I just know that it happens. And those ones that you drop back into or feel like continue on, are you going somewhere else? I mean, is that a different dimension? What do you think?
Something I've wondered about is that because I have locations that I recur to revisit over and over in dreams, and it struck me that we almost have like a separate memory from our dream state, and that seems like a really odd thing, and I guess would give some credence to the idea that there's some part of the brain that's associated with that that is retaining these locations.
Absolutely. Lex, and again, where do people get your book?
It's available on Amazon, various online retailers. I even saw a copy of it in Bricks and Mortar, Barnes & Noble.
Isn't that cool to see your book in a store?
Yeah, it was sandwiched between some witchcraft books.
Yeah. Did you try to, like, move it so everybody could see it a little more?
I thought about it, but I just kind of left it in its natural state.
That's cool. Lex, talk to you later. Good luck. You're back on duty when? Sunday night?
Yeah.
Okay, my friend. Do well, and thanks for being on the team with us.
Thank you so much, George. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you.
Lex Lonehood, our webmaster, has been with me since I've been doing this program. He's one heck of a guy. Up next, open lines. It's up to you.